Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
Good morning, I'm Roland Martin. Today on News One Now, a shocking video gone viral. A South Carolina girl yanked out of her desk, thrown on the floor, dragged by a school police officer. Parents in one South Carolina school district are calling for answers. The director of the FBI, he says viral videos such as this video, part of the reason for rising violence in some major U.S. cities. The White House, frankly, is distancing themselves from his comments. What effect will that have on policing, but also the reaction from the community? A new study proves that driving while black leads to more stops and arrests. Also, walking while black. Damn, if you was black, he was catching hell in America. Also, the grandson of a slave, he was America's first elected black governor. Douglas Wilder is here to share his life's journey as detailed in his new book, Son of Virginia, and we'll talk to him about the presidential campaign. Plus, Olympic swimmer Cullen Jones breaks down the importance of teaching black kids how to swim. Time to bring the funk on News One Now on TV One. Folks, disturbing video out of South Carolina. A teenage girl violently pulled to the ground by the school resource officer. It happened at the Spring Valley High School in Richland County. The sheriff's office says the student was under arrest for causing a disturbance in the classroom but refused to leave. A Richland County spokesman for the department says he is well aware of the viral video and finds it disturbing.
Well, Sheriff Leon Lott, he's out of town right now attending a law enforcement conference at this point. But he did see the video, and he was very disturbed by what he saw. As a matter of fact, he has questions. He has questions just like everybody else does. And he wants answers to those questions. Once he has these answers, he will address them. The sheriff and the school district, they're going to come together and they will take appropriate action necessary once this investigation is totally completed.
Now, two students were arrested, including that particular girl. Apparently, one young girl who tried to come to that student's aid. Also, they were critical of the students in the classroom who shot that video. The Richland 2 Black Parents Association has denounced the actions of this officer. Joining us on the phone line right now is Association Chairman Pastor Hugh Harmon. Also joining us on FaceTime is South Carolina State Representative Cesar McKnight. Pastor, first I want to go to you because we see this video, and I understand that according to the teacher, the young girl was causing a disturbance in the class. But to have this officer violently take her out of that chair and drag her, and then if you see the extended video, he then tells the other students, I will arrest all of you as well. This is stunning to too many people.
This is shocking. It's not just stunning. It is shocking. It blew our minds just seeing the video. And I know there are many people that say that we need to wait until the investigation is over, until we see the backstory of what took place leading up to this. But essentially, I have a daughter in the school district myself, and I would be wow. I don't even know the words I would have if I received a phone call or saw a video where my child was treated in this way. And that's my response to everyone. Regardless of where you stand with regard to police and their interaction with kids, just the violence, just the crudeness with which she was handled, regardless of if she was defiant or not, it's just shocking and appalling.
Representative McKnight, I want to go to you. I mean, obviously, when you see this video, you represent Columbia, South Carolina. What do you make of the actions of this particular police officer?
Good morning, Roland. The actions of Deputy Fields are totally and completely unacceptable. There is no way to justify the use of force by this officer. He weighs almost 300 pounds. This child, by all reports, is about 5'6 and 120 pounds. Beyond that, Officer Fields is a competitive power lifter and a football coach. For him to even come to use that type of force is just inexcusable. When I saw it, I mean, literally my skin just crawled. I do know that the sheriff has called in the Department of Justice and the FBI. I personally don't feel that's enough. We don't have, South Carolina's an at-will employment state, and Sheriff Lott can fire Deputy Fields right now, and I think that he should. there's no way to excuse this use of force. And please understand that we have passed body camera legislation. There's been wondering, why wouldn't it body camera footage? But we've passed the legislation, but the policy has not been created yet by our state law enforcement. We should have that by the first part of the year. And I was once an opponent of students having cell phones in schools, but after seeing this and seeing what could potentially happen, we clearly need them, because had we not had this footage, the story would have been vastly different about what happened with this interaction.
His name is Officer Ben Fields. He has been sued several times. He was sued for allegations of excessive force. He actually won that particular lawsuit. That took place in 2007 when he won that suit. After he faced another lawsuit as well. He's actually one of 10 defendants in another case that's going to go to trial in January, where a student claimed that they were unlawfully expelled from school and said their due process was violated. Now, what's also interesting is that he is barred from the schools right now. This officer Fields also immediately removed his Facebook and Twitter page as well. He's also a football coach as well. First of all, Pastor, what is the next step that you think needs to be taken in the district?
The next step needs to be a more concise and statement made to the public, made to the parents, made to the students, made to the community at large. Just standing with the Sheriff's Department, we keep hearing that there will be a thorough investigation, and we appreciate that. But following this, we need to have some sort of town hall meeting where we sit and really hash out not just this incident, but other incidences that have been reported that have happened within this district and surrounding our kids. And these are the kind we need traction on this. We need the dialogue to be opened up here in this state.
Pastor Harmon, I certainly appreciate it. Thanks a lot, Representative McKnight. We thank you as well. Surely keep us updated on what takes place next.
Certainly, I will do.
All right, folks, I want to go right now to my panel. We have former Virginia Governor Douglas Wilder joining us on the set. Also, Catalina Byrd, media consultant, host WEAA 88.9 FM in Baltimore. David Swerlick, he is assistant editor at the Washington Post. Also, Dr. Avis Jones DeWeaver, she is leadership strategist for Exceptional Leadership Institute for Women. Governor, I want to go with you first. As a former governor, a former mayor as well, when you see this video, when you see how students are being treated in the classroom, what does that tell you?
That there needs to be more dialogue, that it needs to be open, that it needs to be full, and it's a national problem. It's not local. Last week, I had a seminar and a symposium in Richmond at Virginia Commonwealth University, where I teach at the school that's named for me, the Wilder School of Government. And the title of it was Race and American Society. You have to drill down on how race plays a part and a role in the totality of American society, whether it's education, whether it's criminal justice, whether it's health, employment. It's there, but no one wants to discuss it. Everyone wants to say, well, it's past, or we're getting past it, we're doing better. All that might be good, but until shows like yours and others on a regular basis understand that race does affect us, so much so that it's going to affect not only our national reputation, but it's going to affect us as a people. Who are we? We are Americans, not black or white. We are Americans.
In fact, we look at the stats, massive numbers when it comes to young black girls being expelled from class. Also, I'm playing this video right here. This took place recently as well. This is Round Rock, Texas, where, again, a police officer was dealing with a student. He's talking with him. The young man is talking back. You're going to see in just a moment here where this police officer violently takes this student down. And in the statement, they claim that the officer was protecting the student from himself. In fact, the school district even said that the actions of this cop were appropriate. Now watch this right here. All of a sudden, grabs him by his neck, slams him to the ground. This is in Round Rock, Texas, about a month ago. You take this, you take what's happening in South Carolina, and you see that sort of action again happening in the schools. Avis.
I am infuriated. here's what needs to be happening. You know, we can have dialogues from here until the cows come home, but the bottom line is these police officers, these thugs, need to be taken out of our schools. There's absolutely no excuse for what happened here. And with regards to what happened with the young lady in South Carolina, let me just ask you, can you imagine a police officer picking up a white girl and literally throwing her across the classroom like that? I can never imagine that happening. He needs to be fired yesterday. And beyond that, I would argue that the teacher needs to go too, because he was just standing there complicit and allowing all of this to occur in his classroom without one word to the police officer to say, hey, wait a minute, don't do that to my student. Verbal abuse, which is what she is accused of, is not justification for physical abuse.
In fact, David Swerlick, this is a photo from last year, a Knox County, Virginia police officer where arrested a young man, choked. That cop was fired in 48 hours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what I see when I see the round.
Obviously, that man there is not
right.
Black.
And he's white, and then, as you pointed out, the cop was fired immediately. What I see when I see the Round Rock case, when I see the Columbia case, is police who don't understand their role in the situation and don't understand that the children are children.
Yes.
Black children are citizens. They're not second-class citizens. And if a school resource officer has to be called to a situation, they as you say, they are not qualified to be there if they don't go ahead, Roland.
But also you have to do in schools what we also want them to do in the streets, that is de-escalate the situation.
And this is the point I'm getting to, is that if they come there and they can't understand that their situation there is not to be kowtowed to, not to have the kid respect their authority, but to defuse the situation, call the vice principal, ask the teacher to assist you, talk the situation down, then they're no good at their job.
Catalina?
They don't belong in the schools. David, you said that they didn't recognize they were children. You're in a school, so that should go without saying. Right. The fact that she was seated, she wasn't being unruly, whatever she might have been saying to another student, that it was not called for what happened. And that teacher, where is your gumption, your testicular fortitude? You allowed a child to be dragged across, and you stood there.
Now, here's what's interesting, of course, while this comes out a day after FBI Director James Comey said that civilian videos gone viral are having a direct impact on crime in the country. He's saying that in terms of crime being decreased. Here is FBI Director Comey talking about this issue.
Maybe something in policing has changed. In today's YouTube world, are officers reluctant to get out of their cars and do the work that controls violent crime? Are officers answering 911 calls, but avoiding the informal contact that keeps bad guys from standing around, especially with guns? I spoke to officers privately in one big city precinct who described being surrounded by young people with mobile phones held high, taunting them when they get out of their cars. They said to me, "We feel under siege and we don't feel much like getting out of our cars." I've been told about a senior police leader in this country who urged his force to remember that our political leadership has no tolerance for any of you being involved in the next viral video.
Now, that was Friday, the University of Chicago Law School. We was talking about cops. But here's what's interesting. To me, this is Comey making excuses.
Yes.
And you've seen mayors make excuses as well. And of course, the White House has been stepping back from this. What he's essentially saying is, hey, we're afraid we might get busted on video, so we don't want to police, as if the only option you have is to do what Officer Fields did to this girl, and somehow, that is, get aggressive.
Roland, let me say that one of the problems here is the law. And what do we mean by the law? The presumption. What is happening in America today is that there is a presumption of guilt on behalf of the people who are being offended, and a presumption of innocence on behalf of the officers. It's a total reversal of what the presumption is. The presumption is innocence of all persons until some proof is offered. And in these instances, you have the presumption so far ahead that action is taking place, and it puts everybody on the defensive. It has to change. So The American attitude towards how people are treated has to change, period.
No, the American attitude towards how black folks are treated.
Oh, yes.
Because, again, and that's just real. And, again, this is one of the reasons why when I called Bill O'Reilly a despicable coward for his attacks on Black Lives Matter and Sean Hannity and the rest of them, is they're furthering this because it is as if, yes, black lives don't matter. And anybody who watches this video has to say that is not how you handle a situation. Even if this young girl was disturbing the class and you needed her to be taken out, there's a way to do that, whether you are a teacher or a principal, where you literally don't grab her, snatch her out of a chair, and drag her down, and then threaten the other students with arrest.
Right. He put her in a headlock. And think about the conversation we would be having if he had put her in a headlock, thrown her to the ground, and she had been seriously hurt. I mean, that could have happened.
If you think about what happened in Baltimore with Freddie Gray, if you look at the way that her chair hits backwards, it could have easily
Shelley,
been
please
a spinal
cue the video again.
Yeah. It could have easily been a spinal cord video.
Right. Again, here's the video again.
Look at that.
Right.
That's dangerous.
Dumps her, she literally comes down on the back of her neck.
Right.
And the back of her head. I mean, we see football plays where players literally suffer concussions hitting the floor like that.
The first thing that Director Comey said in that clip that you played, Roland, was that something must have changed in policing. What the reality is that African Americans, we've been saying for years
this
that's what's happened. Right. What
changed
is that these things are being caught on video now. Yes.
This is what happened.
Yeah. Exactly.
This changed.
And,
now what they have been doing for years is now being chronicled, and they can't handle the fact that America is now seeing what the actions and Governor, they have been costing taxpayers millions of dollars in settlements because of their actions, and now they can't lie on police reports anymore because folks now have proof.
Well, I think this, when I said about the law, it's actually government. And so government has to make the change, state, local, and national. And you can't blame other people for it. It's the lawmakers. And as somebody pointed out, it's the people who hire these officers.
Yep.
If you don't like what they're doing, they're out.
Yeah. That's it.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. You know, why should you be afraid of cell phone video if you're doing the right thing?
That's right.
Why would you sit in your car because people have videos? If you're a professional, if you're doing what you're supposed to do, you should want to be video to protect yourself against things that are inaccurate accusations against you.
I go back to Rialto, California, when they've had body cameras there. The number of excessive force complaints against police officers dropped dramatically, more than 60%, and the number of times the cops claimed that they had to use justified force also dropped. So the body cameras caused the cops and the folks who they were going after to be cautious, saying, hold up, now I can lie, but that tape don't lie.
Right.
Hold tight 1 second. We come up in Ole Miss. Confederate flag comes down on that university campus. We'll talk about that also. Driving and walking while black in America. Man, can we sleep while black? Also, we'll talk about Governor Wilder's book, his journey to becoming America's first black elected governor, and we'll talk some presidential politics as well. 17 after the hour, News 1 Now on TV 1.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Oh, that raggedy rebel flag in Mississippi has come down on the Ole Miss campus. That's right. Just over a week ago, the student body senate voted to remove it, even though student opinion was divided. Flag has been sent to the university's archives. State leaders hope that Ole Miss is just one stepping stone to removing the flag statewide. All right, folks. Dr. Ben Carson is feeling the heat again for another controversial comment. This time, on Sunday on Meet the Press, Carson compared abortion to slavery while making the case to abolish Roe versus Wade. So what do y'all make of him? He keeps bringing up slavery to compare it to Affordable Care Act, now to abortion.
He always acknowledges when he does that he's not supposed to say the word, supposedly. So I think that he does it for the shock value.
Yeah.
That's really what it is. There's no way in the world you can believe that all of these things are analogies for slavery. And the abortion one was just mind-boggling. He brought up abolitionists and where would we be, I guess essentially saying we would still be slaves if the abolitionists hadn't stood up for what they believe in. And that is not in any way akin to abortion or women's rights to choose. It made no sense.
Yeah, to Catalina's point, you know, he compared abortion to slavery, Obamacare to slavery, Obama to Hitler, prison makes you gay, etc. At some point, these things are not accidents. One of those could be taken out of context. At some point, you're deliberately saying stuff just to get a rise out of people, which is not presidential.
Well, and here's the deal, Avis. I mean, you look at the polling numbers in Iowa. He's now doubled up Donald Trump. I mean, evangelicals are loving him.
Yeah.
They're loving his quiet demeanor.
Yeah. They're loving the quiet demeanor. They're also loving the ridiculousness, right, for some reason, that's coming out of his mouth. He is tapping into, let's be very real, people say that he's crazy. I don't think he's crazy. I think he's crazy like a fox, okay? He is the master. He is the master of dog whistle politics, right? In a way, the way that he keeps bringing up slavery, obviously it minimizes the gravitude, yeah, of slavery. He obviously has no grasp of his own history, clearly, or else he wouldn't be making all these ridiculous comparisons.
All right, so I want to go ahead. I want to play this video here. Do you have it right here? Do you guys have it?
Think that that baby is their enemy and that they have a right to kill it. Can you see how perverted that line of thinking is? During slavery, a lot of the slave owners thought that they had the right to do whatever they wanted to that slave, anything that they chose to do.
Governor?
Well, it's very unfortunate. I know Ben, and I know all of you on this panel know him, and I think in his field he's been excellent in terms of surgeon. Unfortunately, to trivialize, as has been pointed out, the most horrible stain on America's history by such a lack of of understanding what slavery was about. It gets back to what we were speaking earlier relative to police brutality, etc. Unless Americans are willing to learn about slavery, talk about slavery, they shouldn't talk about it in the dialect that they speak of.
Or don't be like the book company in Texas that calls slaves migrant workers.
Yeah. It's so bad when you consider.
Right. We came over here looking for a job. Right.
Speaking of book companies, I really just feel like this is not a real presidential run. I feel like he is doing this to sell books.
Absolutely.
He is retired from Hopkins.
But
this is what keeps him relevant books.
But here's the deal. Bottom line is, you look at the polling data, it's real. I mean, here we are in almost going into November. And you look at what's happening at the top. I mean, it is as if the Republican presidential campaign has been overtaken by, I mean, they are seeing the results of appealing to Tea Party mentality. And now the Republicans cannot figure out how to even get control of this thing because they're like, Jeb Bush is floundering. They don't care about Rubio, Scott Walker, governor of Wisconsin, who fought back the labor unions. He dropped out of the race. Mike Huckabee, he over there preaching all day. You got Carla Fiorina, went up, now she back down. They sitting there like, what the hell did we just do?
I mean, you've got four polls out now that say Carson is leading in Iowa. I do think, though, some of these statements, again, to your point, some of these statements he's making are going to propel him ahead. Iowa in some of the early primary states, I do think they're going to make him weaker as a potential nominee or general election candidate because what he says doesn't appeal.
Yeah, but here's the deal, though. Yeah. The general election is irrelevant because you got to get through the primary first. And the bottom line is, if you go through Iowa and New Hampshire and Nevada and then South Carolina, then you go to Florida and Texas and Georgia. I mean, at the end of the day, you got to win the nomination first before you even get to the general.
The Republicans made this problem for themselves because they didn't put the Tea Party in check when they created. As the governor said, nobody wanted to talk about race. The Tea Party came into emergence when we had our first black president. And all of the hate and the racism that we knew existed had the covers blown off of it. Now, had they addressed it then, they wouldn't have this Donald Trump-Ben Carson problem now. And
well,
the reason
here's
they love Ben Carson is because he's a black man willing to say the same hate speech that they believe in their hearts, but he's willing to say it with a black face.
But here's the deal, though, the reality, Governor, and that is they appeal to the Tea Party because it helped them win in 2010. It helped them win in 2014. Right. And so That's what ended up happening.
But they feel they've lost, even though they've won in 2010 and 2014, because what did they get? That's why they're throwing out John Boehner, because they're saying, well, look, we've got the control of the House. We've got the control of the Senate. But what do we got? Hillary Clinton is as fortunate a woman as she can be to have these people running against her, because all she's got to do is keep it in the middle of the road.
We're going to go to a break right now. We're going to talk a little bit more presidential politics. Plus, we're going to talk to Governor Wilder about his book as well. That is detailing, of course, his long history in politics. It is 26 after the hour. News One Now on TV.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is, when you show one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
Welcome back to News One Now on TV One. We're chatting with Douglas Wilder, former governor of Virginia, about his book, Son of Virginia, Life in America's Political Arena. Governor, you cover a lot of stories. What's interesting is you became mayor of Richmond, Virginia, same time President Obama became mayor, president of the United States. And you just we the same way. You and Omega, I'm an alpha, but we cut right to the point. You make it perfectly clear that the president did not there was the return on investment to Black folks was not there.
Well, you know, it's always difficult to pass judgment on an administration until some time has passed, so you can see what the tea leaves have rendered. And I would say this, Roland, I would have lost a ton of money had you told me that the president would have had an opportunity to appoint someone to the U.S. Supreme Court of color when the Democrats were in control of the House as well as in the Senate. So it shouldn't have been any difficulty getting that person confirmed. And I'd have lost a lot of money. If you had told me that he would have had two chances to do that, I would have lost all of my money, because I could not have believed that a person of color could not have understood that the Supreme Court has been that bastion of support for those people who have been denied the liberties. And I was concerned when I see Loretta Lynch being considered as Attorney General for maybe a couple of years. If she was good enough for that or this, then should she not have been considered? Thurgood Marshall's presence on the court was not just a vote. He worked to educate the other members of the court as to why they should be doing certain things, and they didn't, and that hasn't happened. So
you also were tough in saying, why was this administration afraid to really publicly embrace Black issues?
Well, I would not have been able to have stayed in the room at the Congressional Black Caucus when he told those people to shut up and quit whining and put on their marching shoes. I would have used the language you would have used when that guy didn't vote for me.
And I'll be perfectly honest with you. I was right there, and I was sitting at Congressman Clyburn's table and literally lined up with the podium, and I sat there and said, I cannot believe what I just heard.
Well, you would have heard differently from me, because I was not raised that way to accept it from anyone. Who in the hell do you think you're talking to? I would have said. I don't know how loudly. I don't know if I'd have said it as loudly as Joe Wilson did when he jumped up and screamed in the Congress. But it's insulting to say that those people who have stretched out so far for you, if any white president had said that, what would they have said to him?
Yeah,
speak up here to me.
People would have walked out of the room. Probably.
Exactly. So then why would you sacrifice your principle for the personality?
Speaking of principle, the first column I ever wrote as a professional journalist, Austin American Statesman, 1992, and I got to get your take on this. I took Reverend Jackson to task for what I consider torpedoing your presidential campaign. And you, a lot of people don't remember. You ran for president. Yeah. I didn't forget. You ran for president in 1992. And there were African Americans who felt that you were too conservative, and they shut that down before you even got out of the gate.
He's absolutely right. And you and I had some brief talk about it. And Jesse is a friend and a fraternity brother. But I think it was more a personality thing, because the Congressional Black Caucus was taking place here. And people were coming out of the elevators asking me to come on, we need to chat. They were having fundraisers all over town. And Jesse said, well, you know, and he had said to several people, you know, I'm still around. And I said to him, I said, Jesse, let's talk and we can try to get together. The people of Virginia didn't want me to run for president because they said Virginia is a one-term governorship, constitutionally very strong. I had been left broke. I didn't know how broke I was as governor. And so I had to spend most of my time, I thought I could campaign on the weekends. You can't do that. And so I ran from September to December and said, hey, I'm finished, and left. The loudest applause I ever got in the joint session of the General Assembly was when I said, I am no longer a candidate for the presidency of the United States. He said, yeah, yeah. They were right. I should not have run at the time because I needed to concentrate all of my efforts in Virginia. I've never held that against Jesse. I know him well. And he's one of the better promoters that you will find. But I do recall what you said, and I thank you for it.
I appreciate any questions.
Well, you know, it's funny that you say that because I feel like we're still in a place where, like, people feel like you're too conservative because of something that they've dubbed respectability politics. Because you dress well and you choose to choose your words carefully and to be thoughtful in your intention.
Yeah, somehow that makes you. Same thing, but go. I'm sorry. Go.
No, you don't. See what I'm saying? That's what I'm talking about. He didn't see him cut nobody off, and that's why you excel. But now you take somebody to act like Roland or Jesse, for that matter, and there's some kind of realness that is implied because of your willingness to be. Gauche or braggadocious, we shall say. And when we talk about how far we've come and how far we can still go, when do we get back to the place where having some dignity and acting with some decorum is not a bad thing?
I think this. I think that the people are always ahead of the politicians. Always. Whether they're people of color or otherwise. And so the drill down, if you speak to John Doe and Mary Doe, they will tell you how they feel, and they are not going to consider you too conservative or too liberal or too progressive. The word is practical. What is the art of practicality? What is it that I can get achieved? What can we do together? As Lyndon Johnson would say, come, let us reason together. And I think that's one of the things that we need to do in this country. When we looked at the videos earlier as it relates to the police brutality, reason has to come into here. And we got to talk. And consequently, black leadership is no different from any other kind of leadership. It's a tautology. It means to step in front and to be in front and to lead.
Hold tight 1 second. Going to break. Back on News 1 Now on TV 1. Just a moment.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News 1 Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV 1.
All right, y'all. I was going to run the Cullen Davis story. We did a segment with him about swimming. But my show, so I'm going to make a call to Audible. So we're going to run that tomorrow. So we're going to continue our conversation with Governor Wilder about his book. But let me go through our birthday shout-out time right now. Cullen Davis was the guy who killed his wife's lover in Texas. Sorry, excuse me, I got a memory. Actress and sportscaster Jane Kennedy, she turned 64 years old today, so happy birthday to Jane Kennedy. On this day in history, in 1891, Philip Downing patents the street letter drop box. 1954, Benjamin O. Davis Jr. became the first African-American general in the United States Air Force. All right, so again, tomorrow we'll run the piece on black folks in swimming with Cullen, but I want to continue our conversation with Governor Wilder. He's right. At your show, you can do the same thing. David, you got a question?
Yeah, no, Governor, so obviously you stand on the shoulders of people who made it possible for you to be the first black governor.
Yes.
The first black president stands on your shoulders. What do you think, what lesson from the book, what lesson going forward in politics do you want to leave to future generations of leaders?
Well, first of all, that there's no such thing as final success. Success is something you continue to work to and you work for. You don't ever get to the top. Okay. You always should be climbing. The lesson is education is still key. It has never stopped being key. And as far as politics is concerned, I have a one-word definition for it, and that's money. There's not a proposition you can name, there's no proposal that's going to come up that doesn't involve money. And unless we as people understand how that plays in our society, how it plays in our communities, I never really was really concerned about the fair piece of the pie coming to certain people. I learned that it was important for me to have my hand on the knife that cuts the pie. Because if you are making the pie, and if you're cutting it, and I've got to sit to say, well, look, I'd like to have a nice piece of it, then the decision is yours as to what piece that I get. And so once I became governor, I didn't have to ask, how could I cut it? I could say, as Lyndon Johnson would say, come, let us reason together.
But isn't it important, and I've said it before, to understand that, and you got it, that and even David Paterson got it for the small amount of time when he was governor of New York, that you are there to break up that cabal. You are there, I've said this to the White House on many occasions, that I didn't come out as hard as I did to see the same folk running stuff. Mm-hmm. It's there to break up the cabal. It's there to provide the opportunities. It's there to say, what's the return on the investment? And that's really it. And when it comes to appointments, because the people you appoint to senior positions, those are the folks who then get hired in corporate America, who get hired to be executive vice presidents, SVPs, and CEOs, and then they bring in the folks who they know. But again, when it keep looking the same, hell, then you don't create the next generation of leaders.
And I can say to you that I appointed more persons of color, more women, more young people than any governor in the history of the state. And I was never criticized for it. Mm-hmm. Why? Because these were people of competence.
Yes.
These were people of achievement. And I wasn't appointing you because of your gender or you because of your race. I was appointing you because you could cut it. Many of these young people today are CEOs of their companies. They are heads of various groups. Some of them have gone into elected politics. And so what I would hope could come out of the book is the understanding that we can be a part of the whole, and we can also lead. But leadership, again, is that tautology. And we can't believe that we've got to sit and wait for someone to tell us when to move. And you cannot be afraid of the obstacles, nor can you be afraid of the criticism.
Got to get your take on Black Lives Matter. They're putting major pressure on Senator Bernie Sanders, putting pressure on Secretary Hillary Clinton, on former Governor Martin O'Malley. And then they got their haters, folks saying, oh my goodness, these young black people are too militant. You got Sean Hannity calling, saying the Dems, saying do a Black Lives Matter town hall is like partnering with the Klan. Bill O'Reilly saying it's like Nazis. I think they just mad because they're giving them too much hell.
Well, I think the problem is the wording again. And when people are saying, well, Black Lives Matter, well, does that mean other lives don't matter? Well, if you said Black Lives Matter too, would that satisfy you? Would it be all right if you said Black Lives Matter also?
I don't think so.
No, I don't. But the question is, you've got to go back to the origins. You've got to go back to understand our nation. You've got to understand slavery. That's why I'm still pushing, and I will have the United States Slavery Museum. Not a black museum. It's a difference. I'm speaking about a slavery museum. Slavery has been known all over the country. But do you think people know about slavery in this country?
Oh, God, no.
Yeah, no.
Do you think African-Americans know about it?
I told some African-Americans, I said, if you look at the first slave coming 1619, I said, and then here we are 396 years later, I said, if you use 1970 as the barometer, we were so-called free.
Yeah.
I said, even though free from economic and educational apartheid, which we still know is not true, I said, we're talking 45 years. I said, a total of 396 years, we've only so-called been free 45. Hell, I'm 46.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
I tweeted that, and people went, dang, I ain't never thought about that. I'm like, no, numbers don't lie.
Roland, my father, his mother and father were slaves. He hated to talk about it. My mother would say, Robert, for God's sake, he's asking you. The boy's asking, would you please tell him? And I would worry my father, well, Dad, would you tell me what happened? And he would talk about what you see in the book about his father having to walk to see his wife and the two children 20 miles and then come back to get beaten because he didn't have a pass, and then the deprivations and such. And yet, even out of slavery, he had a brother that went to medical school, finished Shaw University, and became a doctor, and practiced here in the District of Columbia. Unfortunately, died at about 30 years of age before he could help him. Mm-hmm. And so even out of slavery, we were achieving, we were rising, and we were coming up. That story is not understood, not told, or as to what the black codes, how they developed from slavery, how the anti-segregation laws or anti-integration laws developed. Just in the 50s in this country, as you point out, you're only 46, but you've seen the evils of what is taking place. So when you get to the Black Lives Matter thing, it's a the people who attack it go out of their way in many instances to avoid the fuller discussion as to what the evils and the results of racism has been in this country.
Because the reality is that was a woman who in North Carolina, she was talking to a gentleman the largest construction company there. Mm-hmm. She said, how'd y'all get started? We said, well, my dad was in the military, and then when he was coming out, World War II, they said, well, we'll just give you some of this road construction equipment. That's how he started his business.
Yeah.
I said, you can't show a black person. They gave a shovel. And so here you have this third generation, they benefited from somebody giving them road construction equipment, where if you were a black soldier, nobody gave you the equipment, you couldn't get a loan, and so you now wonder, well, how is this $100 million a year company, whatever? It's because daddy got the hookup out of World War II, and that couldn't happen to us. I'm going to go to a quick break. We'll come back right back. Sure. News 1 now, TV 1.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Oh, again, final thoughts with Governor Wilder. His book is Son of Virginia, Life in America's Political Arena. 90 seconds.
Well, I tell you, Roland, I appreciate the opportunity to be here. I would hope that we really do continue to participate in the political arena, but it doesn't mean that you've got to run for office. It means to be a part of the decision-making process. I call it the polity.
Commissions, committees.
Yes, and be heard. But be educated and know what you're talking about. Demand everything that is right and criticize what is wrong. Mm.
Love it.
Well, I want to tell you this here. I got a woman, Deidre Griffin. Doug Wilder still looks good.
Go read that other one that says the difference.
Oh, y'all, again, the book is Son of Virginia, A Life in America's Political Arena. I want y'all to be sure to get this book. Be sure to get that book, y'all, and do that. And, Governor, come back anytime. All you got to do is let a brother know, and we'll have you on the panel. Tomorrow, News 1 Now, NBA Hall of Famer and former Globetrotter Mel Lark Lemon on the show, plus Wildin' Out Wednesday, plus we'll have the Cullen Jones segment as well right here on News 1 Now, TV 1. Thanks a bunch, Catalina, David, Avis. Thank you so very much, folks. We'll have more details, of course, tomorrow as relates to the South Carolina story, the young girl being dragged out of that chair viciously, and we'll find out what happens next. So many people are calling for that person, that cop, Ben Fields, to be fired as a result. For more details, go to news1.com. Also, for all of these stories, hit me up on Twitter at Roland S. Martin. You can also go to our News 1 Facebook page. You got folks, be sure to have a great day. I'll see you tomorrow right here on News 1 Now on TV 1. Y'all know how we end the show. Y'all ready? 1, 2, 3. Holla! What is wrong with y'all? You been on the show, brother.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News 1 Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV 1.